You see, it's interesting how we find new things about ourselves based on the experiences and situations we kind of get ourselves into. Something happened some weeks ago, right? I had this heated conversation with my line manager at work, and I was so emotional in that conversation.
I felt so triggered, such that I started responding directly and without putting much thought into understanding the point of view of my manager. Whether that view was valid or not, he had a view, and the view had a point, but I was not in the mental position to listen to that view. I was coming directly up, opposing that view. And working in a team, I work in a startup, right? So obviously we need to have a solid, team playing attitude and character to work, such that we must always be directed towards one goal, right? Which is, making sure this startup that wants to turn into a company, this startup has to work, right? And I was emotional in this conversation, and I threw words that I would probably have not if I'd done a little more thinking before speaking. Well, it doesn't mean I was particularly wrong about the things that I said. I don't necessarily think I am, but I would have definitely preferred if that conversation went in a different way. I would have preferred if I was the cool and, calm guy, articulating every point and making sure that I learned my opinions better and my opinions were hitting home, right? And was not just hitting the wall because it was coming like a stone that I was throwing. So, of course, I will begin to overthink and overanalyze this conversation. I would imagine how different the conversation would have been if I said some things, if I did not say some things. And in the moment of analyzing this conversation and trying to understand how I could have made it better, I had a reality check. There was this sudden realization for me, and it was that I actually have a great level of hypocrisy in my approach to life and work. Feels weird to say that, but I used to talk about how I have this insane level of criticism. I think I've mentioned it a couple of times in previous episodes in this podcast as well. And upon hearing anyone say something or do something, my first instinct is almost always negative, right? I'm thinking that what this person is saying is probably wrong, or what this person has done is probably wrong. I may not even have enough information to back it up, but the first thing I'm most likely thinking is, this person is probably wrong. And this attribute affects my work too, because I open a code base, an existing code base, I look into it, and the first thing I'm thinking about is looking for the wrong structural patterns that have been used, wrong design patterns. I'm looking for how the code base is very unclean. I'm looking for how the code base has so much of spaghetti code, and I'm just looking for the worst things about the code base. Instead, when I come across a code base, my first I believe normally my first instinct or the first thing I should be thinking about is how can I learn from what I'm seeing right now. It should be more of that than just criticizing everything that comes my way. But that was not even the greater shock for me, because I mean, my criticism is something that I have come to know that I have. You know, anytime I have these feelings, I have them, I enjoy my moment in having them, and then I go ahead to look at, okay, yeah, so what can be good in what I'm seeing or hearing at this particular time. But the shock I had this past few weeks of analyzing that conversation with my line manager was that it was more of hypocrisy than just being an insane critic. I realized that in the context of that situation, right, I had the reality check that I was good at stating the wrong, mostly because I have some belief that I am also wrong, and I feel directly attacked when I get reminded that I am probably wrong. So in essence, calling out other people's flaws, their attitude, character, or their work, or anything at all, was actually a projection of my hidden, unknown dark side. And as usual, that's why I'm having this conversation in the fourth episode of the Tool series. And the question that drives today's conversation about being human is, do you know your dark sides?
So without further ado, welcome again to the Journey with Mide. I know where I was, this is where I am, and together we're about to find out where I am going to be. To not see the residues of should I say hypocrisy particularly in myself, I then started to find resources on how we can have repressed traits or characters that, you know, actually project themselves in a different form, you know. And it's a little bit similar to a concept I've talked about in, I think, the first episode in the Tool series, where I was talking about emotional intelligence. And I was saying something there about how somebody could be projecting anger, but it could be a projection of a particular sadness or a particular trigger point in their childhood or in their past, or it could even just be a projection in the evening of something that happened in the morning, right? It could be as close as that. And similar to that theory is also having a repressed trait or a repressed character that comes up and projects itself in a different form, the one that makes you feel like you perceive them as wrong or incorrect or morally inappropriate, right, in other people. But in essence, you know, anytime you find yourself being very emotional about something that someone else does, that you're emotionally talking about it, you're passionately talking about it, that this thing is wrong, what this person did is not right, and you'll continuously look for so many reasons and points and ideas and facts about why this thing is wrong, and you happen to be so passionate about it, you should check yourself in that situation. You can be confident enough that you most likely have the same traits, but they are being repressed. And because they are being repressed, it eventually comes up as a projection, and that is why you sound so passionate about it, you sound so emotional about it, that is why it affects you so deeply that you find yourself talking about it every time, you find yourself busy. And this particular situation might not even hurt you directly. It could just be you hearing that somebody did something or seeing that somebody does something, and then you just go all and about, you know, talking about how it's so wrong and you're so passionate about it, talking about it with so much energy. At that point, you should take a minute to check yourself. Like I said earlier, you can be confident that you probably have that trait in you as well, but in a repressed form. Now, why am I trying to help you identify this repressed form of attitude or characters that we do not like? I'm calling them dark sides because, I mean, obviously, they are not characters that the society approves of. Like, for me, recognizing hypocrisy it's huge. Hypocrisy is one of the biggest forms of society disapproval, you know, publicly saying that something is wrong, and then you find out that you probably can do the same thing. You probably have the ability to do the same thing, or maybe you even are doing that same thing. You know, it's one of the most terrible things to have. But irrespective, it's important to know these dark sides because it's more dangerous if the society points them out for you. It means that you don't know them, they were projected, and now you're going to get backlash from the society for pointing it out for you. And in the context of this episode, I'm going to highlight certain situations that have happened to me actually, and I'm going to bring out different concepts from this situation, and I'm going to tie them to studies, facts, books, from mostly theories in philosophy from philosophers that I researched about in the process of gathering ideas for these particular episodes. So I'm just going to head right into it, right? So there's something I was hoping to start with, right? Not a story, it's more of a cliche sentence that we all see or that we know about, right? And it is, when you're angry and then you do something out of anger, then people tell you, you see, this is your true color. And, you know, as the years go by, right, we have more enlightening, and then people, you know, we say, oh, because I do something when I'm angry, does not mean it is my true color. Why would you say it's only when I'm angry that I see my true color? Unfortunately, I am here to tell you that sentence has some fact to it. It actually does have some elements of truth in it. So it's quite true because, you see, anger in itself is a stress-induced emotion. And, I mean, of course, study shows, research does actually show that when you are stressed, these dark sides that are repressed or suppressed begin to project themselves. So that is why that statement seems to be true. And when people say, oh, it's your true color, I guess where there's an element of, you know, falseness in that sentence or phrase is that it doesn't exactly mean that this is who you truly are. It is just a part of you. Now, using the phrase a part of you might not be entirely correct in what I'm trying to communicate, but because the major idea I'm trying to arrive at here is that these dark sides that we have should not be treated as just one segregated part. It should be, you know, integrated into yourself. So it is you. It's not like there's another, you know, version of you. It is you. You have these tendencies to have, you know, certain traits and all those things. So I'm starting from there just so we can understand, you know, why it is wrong, or not necessarily wrong, but it is not advised to suppress or repress these dark sides as they would eventually come up, project themselves in a new form, in a different form that you probably not be aware of, or you probably not be prepared for. And when they do, other people point it out for you, and it comes as a backlash. And that's it's a more difficult and terrible way to recognize these dark sides. So we have certain philosophers, I mean, people that have actually spent time to investigate this dark side, and they have, you know, been able to help us understand, you know, why we have these dark sides, how it is created, what it entails, how we can use it to in positive ways, you know, take advantage of it. And we will be talking about one prominent person in particular, that would be Carl Jung. Carl Jung is a Swiss philosopher. He invented what we call analytical philosophy, right? Analytical philosophy is a concept that helps you to approach, you know, the idea of psychotherapy by breaking them down and actually analyzing the present, you know, more than just the past. So many of the kind of psychoanalysis we have at the moment is mostly, you know, they mostly try to, you know, peek into what your early days were like, what your childhood was like, and then they use that information to help you understand who you are now. But what Carl Jung, to get the pronunciation right. So what Carl Jung was, what he invented or founded at the time was using even your present situation to help you understand who you are now, you know. And, you know, building upon these principles that Carl Jung had laid down was two people. Both of their names are actually robots. So we have Robert Greene and Robert A. Johnson. They also took these ideas and, you know, they built upon it to create some, more modern examples, you know, an approach to understanding the concept of your dark sides. So for Robert Greene, he talked about this a lot in his book, For Tales of Power, sorry. Anytime I mention Robert Greene, For Tales of Power comes to mind immediately. But yeah, not For Tales of Power, The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene, The Laws of Human Nature. And Robert A. Johnson, he wrote Owning Your Shadow, right? Owning Your Shadow. So what is a shadow? Now, we have a theory called the shadow theory. Now, this was Carl Jung's theory of the human dark side. He called it the shadow theory. What he's trying to say there is that your dark side your dark side is your shadow, and it follows you everywhere. So you have a shadow both literally and metaphorically. So he says, right, that your shadow is always with you. And, you know, I like the idea of using shadow as this interpretation, because of course we're talking about dark sides, and dark sides are dark. Your shadow is always dark, no matter what color of light is being, you know, shone on you. You would always have a dark shadow, right? And one thing Carl Jung would always say, he would always say that it is time we raised more of the point that there's no point to preach, you know, light, right? There's no point to continue to preach light, and if we don't actually teach people to see the light. So what we need to teach people is how to see the light, and not just preaching delights to them. So we should spend more time teaching people to see it. So this means that in order to help you see the light, you need to also understand that there is no light without shadow. Try it anywhere. Try it anywhere. Go into somewhere dark, put on the lights, shine it anywhere. I mean, that's a fact we all know. You always find shadow. When the sun comes up, there's sunlight, there's always shadow. There's nowhere you find light and that there won't be an element of darkness, you know, showing itself in form of the shadow or any form at all, right? So if you are doing everything, you're trying your best to go against shadow, it just means that you do not want to create light. Because the only way you can have zero shadow, total shadow, is to actually have complete darkness. So if you are preparing for light, then you should prepare for shadow as well. So in the chase and pursuit to live a better life and pick up new traits and be a good person and all those things, we need to always put at the back of our minds that this does not entirely cancel out the fact that you have tendencies to do certain things. Certain things that you probably do not even want, right? It's more of constantly looking for how to integrate these things into yourself, that you are one. You don't have a good part or a bad part. No, you are whole in the sense that you can do good and you can also do evil. You can do both of them, respectful of how much of a saint you think you are. You can do both good and evil. So knowing this, it would also help you understand that if this shadow is you, it also means that before you become evil, before you become hostile, it means that there's most likely a background that leads you to that point. And then it can be a background of, feeling ignored, feeling chased away, feeling repressed and suppressed. So you see, these backgrounds is what will lead anybody to hostility, right? So the same happens to you and to your tendency to do evil. That tendency to do evil, when it is ignored, when it is chased away, when it is not accepted, when it is not acknowledged, actually becomes hostile such that it begins to take a consciousness of its own and then starts to manifest and project under certain stress-induced moments in your life. Hence, why people will think that you have a different attitude or a different persona or personality when you are angry. Because anger as a stress-induced emotion was a trigger point, was a pathway to that shadow to now project its own consciousness instead of what you believe is your own consciousness. So you can see that once that shadow is beginning to gain certain control of itself, then it means that you have lost that battle, you've lost that control that you should have. And that is why you do something and then you realize, oh shit, why did I do that? How did I do that? And it's not just in moments where you're angry. So I think I had this situation. I talked about this same situation a couple of episodes ago. I can't remember. Sometime last year, I was talking about this friend that did something and I was like so mad about it. I was emotionally and passionately super angry about this. I went back to that particular situation and I thought about it and I was like, I have the tendencies to do the same thing. I have those tendencies as well. Like, obviously, like, very glaring, in fact, that I actually do have the tendency to do the same thing. And I was so mad about it, right? I was so mad about it. By the way, we made up. I mean, you know. So I was like so mad about it. I was partially, you know, pissed and offended about it. Like, why would you do something like this? Like, this is wrong. It is not right.
Oh boy.
So, you know, in that moment as well, it was also a projection of a part of myself that I was actively repressing. You know, I've been talking about it a lot, sometimes to maybe a couple of friends about how I was actually intentionally trying to repress this part of me that was, you know, manipulative, this part of me that was very like cunning, and you know, like was self-absorbing, and all of those things, and I acknowledged it to an extent that I was all of those things, but I was constantly running away from it. Right? I was running away from it instead of looking for how to actually integrate it into myself and accept that I am whole. I have all of those tendencies, but I chose to do good. And actually use those things as a driving force to achieve better things in life. Not just better for myself, primarily better things to the society. So in that scenario of, you know, maybe me and my friend and things like that, it is evident that I was so passionate about it because it was something I was running away from. So to see someone else do it, it was a trigger point for me. Do you see the picture now? I was running away from something so badly, and then to see someone close to me, you know, to perform the same trait, just made me think like, oh no, no, it just triggered all of those trigger points. You know, how I've been running, something I've been up that has been repressed. That shadow projected itself in that moment, and I reacted in however way I was reacting. So can you see that? It does not mean you're particularly wrong. It does not validate that what this person did was good, or the fact that I have the tendency is good, or if I actually did that thing too, it was good. It doesn't validate that. It doesn't say that, right? What it says is that it helps me to actually see that this thing that happened is something that I can do as well, and it's something I need to start being wary of, that I can be in the same situation, do the same thing, the exact same thing. So everyone carries a shadow, and the less it is embodied in the individual conscious life, the blacker and darker that shadow gets. And if that shadow gets dark enough, it is going to take a consciousness of itself. It's going to project itself when you do not expect, when you are not aware, and you would get the negative results of it. If this shadow is that terrible, why am I telling you to integrate it into yourself? What's the benefit it has for you? Here's the amazing thing about your shadow. Your shadow has a complementary role in your life. So if you are a shy person, you're not somebody that likes to, you know, stand in front of a crowd, you're not somebody that likes to share their ideas, you're not somebody that likes to talk about your opinions in a gathering or in a group of people, you would find that your shadow is exactly opposite. Your shadow would be someone that is bold, someone that is confident, someone that knows how to stand by their opinions, someone that knows how to someone that knows how to express their ideas in however they feel the idea should go, whether they feel it is wrong or right. They just want to express it, get feedback, and work on the feedback. That's the kind of personality or persona your shadow has. So you would see that if you can find a way to integrate this shadow into yourself, you would eventually be able to arrive at levels of confidence. You'd eventually be able to express your opinions and views such that it can help you to get better feedback and use that to you know, improve your ideas and opinions on certain matters and situations. So, it is not an entirely easy task to do, right? Everything I'm saying now, I am saying to myself. I mean, obviously, this is something I just realized weeks ago, and I've been trying to study and understand this aspect of being human, which is, you know, trying to accept all your dark sides and most of the negative traits you think you don't have. So when you're dealing with things like this, matters like this, especially with this shadow, you need to understand that projection is way easier than assimilation. And that is why it is very, very hard for us to actually project or to actually assimilate our shadow and dark side and use it for better. Because when you project, it takes no effort. It takes, it happens almost subconsciously. You are in a stress-induced situation and then it just comes. You don't force it, it just flows. And the funny thing about it is in that moment, you feel powerful. You feel so strong. You feel so energetic. And there's this aura around you that you just want to keep going and going and keep talking and laying out those opinions directly. You know, you just keep going and going about how this person did this, or about how, you know, something affects you, why you don't feel good about it and why it was wrong, you know. There's just this raging energy and you just want to keep going and going and going. You know, it's so easy to project. Assimilation is harder. In assimilation, you want to let that shadow, because it is part of you, you want to let it speak. But as it's coming to speak, as it is bringing up those ideas in your head, the lighter part of you begins to arrange all of these thoughts and ideas, arranges it into words that would sound better, into the voice tone that sounds like you are actually trying to have a conversation, or you are open-minded and you're willing to hear the other person. You know, that is a form of assimilation, because you understand better what that shadow is trying to say. And you're not just coming from the place of, oh, you are wrong and this is wrong, this is what you should have done, and this is how things should be done. You know, so Robert Johnson would say something, or rather he wrote something, but what he wrote was from a poet, an English poet, William Blake. He said, heaven is for form, while hell is for energy. And the best way to communicate or to go at life is to take from these two, combine them, and use them. So like I said earlier, when this hell energy, in air quotes, comes and it brings all of that raging fire and passion and emotion, you go to heaven to find the form. Okay, now that I have all of this energy, how do I want to portray it to the outside world? How do I want to say it? How do I want this person to hear it? How do I want this conversation? How do I want people to perceive me in this conversation we're having? Knowing that I have so much energy, so much passion that I have to deliver, how do I present this energy? Do I need to stand up and make a presentation? Do I need to make a slideshow and, you know, use that energy to stay up in the middle of the night and create an entire slide on how things can be better, how we should work together as a team, how we can have a better process that can lead to better productivity in this company? And I take that slide, I come the next day, I give you the presentation. Now that is you taking all of that energy and rage you have to make things better, giving it in, putting it into a form, and then presenting it to people that need to listen to it. That is way better than sitting in a meeting and going all out talking about how people should come to work early, people should talk to each other better, people should stop using abusive words in the office, people should, you know, care about other people's work, people should reduce, you know, office politics. And if you go all about and all of that, you are just telling people what they should not do, and people do not like to be told what they should do or what they should not do. So that is you channeling all your good cause energy, because it's for a good cause. You want things to be better, but you're taking all this energy that you want to use for good cause, and you're channeling it the wrong way. So take that energy from hell, get form from heaven, and present it better, and you would have you practice that, you continue to have a good balance between your shadow, your dark side, and present it with your lighter form. So you see, in the aim to understand our dark sides better, there are, if you read The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene, there are certain things he said that were very good pointers into understanding why we behave the way we do, right? Why we behave the way we do. And, you know, the laws of human nature, I think there are a total of 9 laws. Yes, 9 laws. And I tried to bring out certain laws of these 9 laws that can really help us to understand this dark side, the effect of the dark side, how to identify them in other people, and, you know, learn how to like navigate through, you know, this human nature and this dark side that we have. So the first thing, you know, the first thing I like to talk about knowing this dark side is something they call the dark triad. So you see, this dark triad is a couple of traits. Triad means that three particular traits that actually show you, or that are very common, you know, in people's dark side. So it's like whatever shadow or dark side you have, these three traits can be kind of found in them. So the three traits are narcissism, psychopathy pretty much, and Michelevianism. So of these three, I would mostly talk about narcissism in this episode, because the remaining two traits they are all kind of similar, right? So I'm just going to be basing on narcissism, and this is something that Robert Greene talks about in his book, Laws of Human Nature. All right, so the law 2 of Laws of Human Nature talks about the laws of narcissism, right? And something he says in that book is, we are all narcissists, some deeper on the spectrum than others. Now, if you're listening to this, and I mean, you probably already at the point of conviction, knowing that maybe you're not a narcissist and you're sure about it, I'm like, no, that is wrong. I am not a narcissist. Well, if you think you're very empathetic, it's easy form of narcissism. So there are three basic forms of narcissism. There's the deep narcissist, there's the functional narcissist, and there's the healthy narcissist. If you think you're a very empathetic person, you have so much empathy, you care about people a lot, you don't have that self-absorbing, you know, attitude, you're actually a healthy narcissist. Because if you think about, if you go to the core, or should I say trait or definition of narcissism, it's mostly about self-love, right? Prioritizing yourself, you know, enjoying the fact that you are who you are, the things that you do, being able to manipulate people to get benefit for yourself and things like that. So when you build empathetic skills, right, or you're naturally empathetic, there's also a form of reward feeling. There's a dopamine effect you get from being a nice person. You do something good, you feel good about it, and it is great, right? And that is why it's called healthy narcissism. So it's a great thing to have. It's a great level of narcissism to be at. And understanding and accepting that it's narcissism, it doesn't mean that it is bad. So what Robert Greene was trying to let us know in the second law of human nature is that narcissism is not particularly bad. It's neither good or bad. It is just as it is. It is just a normal, natural human nature. Although, like he said, some people are deeper on the spectrum than others. So if you recognize that you're a deep narcissist, it means that you crave attention for survival. Like, if you're not given attention, it doesn't feel like you're doing well. It doesn't feel like you're doing anything. Unless people have like your direct attention, then that's when you feel like, oh yeah, you're doing well, you're doing great in life and, you know, all of those things. And then there's a functional narcissist. So this is when you're, you know, in the middle of these two. And it means that you do like the attention when you get it, right? You enjoy it when they give it to you, but you don't constantly seek it, right? It's a good level to be at, right? I think the major difference between a functional narcissist and the healthy narcissist is that the functional narcissist does not 100% care about how you feel. They don't also care so much about how you feel about them, about, you know, if you have their attention. But when you give it to them, they enjoy it, they love it, they like it, but they won't chase it. They won't actively seek for it. But the problem is that they really don't have the level of empathy that they should have for other people. They just do not care. Well, they don't care that much. But you see, the deep narcissist, the funny thing about the deep narcissist is that you can confuse them for being very empathetic, because these people are actually very good listeners. They would listen to you. They would understand you. They would get to see who you are, but not for your good, not to help you, not to make you feel better, but to eventually be able to manipulate you to do something for their own benefit. So it's kind of a little bit confusing to know them or spot them, but you need to be very wary of the end result of this empathetic type of deep narcissist, because they are listening and they are trying to get to understand your feelings well enough to eventually use them against you for their own benefits. So, besides these three levels of narcissism, there's also the what we call the different types of portraying narcissism. So we have people that are the complete control narcissists, right? We have the theatrical narcissist. We have the healthy narcissist, like I've talked about, you know, the people that actually do care about you. They like how they feel about caring about you, you know, and they call about, you know, we find most of them becoming therapists, counselors, you know, and all of that. But you see, the people that I think I kind of like a lot are the complete control narcissist. This is kind of some way I think I fall into as well. But these people, they know that the attention is great for them. They are mostly functional narcissists, but they have complete control about of it. Like, they know when they when they go out and seek for the attention, and they also know when to say, okay, yeah, enough. And, you know, just sometimes they just walk back into their shell, something like that. And then we have the worst type of narcissist, the theatrical narcissist. These are people that will actually be, that will actually show you different faces just so you accept them. So what does this mean? It means that they would be who you want them to be for you. I have complete control now, but this is where I used to be. I used to be proud about it one time. I used to tell people that I can be whoever you want me to be as long as I know you enough, I know you well enough, I know what you want, I will be that person to you. Just to make sure that I continue to get your own attention. And imagine doing that for tons of people that you meet every day. And it was, like I said, projection is very easy. It's easy to actually take up these acts. It's almost seamless. You just meet somebody, you remember the things you know about them, you give them what they want. It's seamless. You just do it. Nobody really knows who you are. They just know the part of you that you show to them. So I am explaining narcissism this well because, as I said, it's one of the foundational traits that makes up our dark side. So understanding what type of narcissist you are, or your level of narcissism, would help you to figure out times in your life when you are projecting instead of assimilating. And acknowledging the projection will begin to help you, you know, change your projection into assimilation, because as you acknowledge them, you must begin to accept them and then integrate them into your lives. So for the case of someone that is a theatrical narcissist, you can see that you have the power to give people what they want, right? That's what it means to be theatrical. You claim to be somebody else for different people. So you have the ability to give people what they want. So you can use that as an opportunity to understand people, you know, when you want to do business, when you want to go into a debate with somebody, when you want to talk with your boss, when you want to talk with your colleagues, knowing what they want. It doesn't mean you now begin to manipulate them to get a result for yourself, but it can help you to do better for the society. You can use that information to help them instead. You can use that information to manage a team better. So one thing I like to do in my own startup, that I run, is that I try to create different environments for all of my team members. So if one of my team members likes to have that physical, kind of collaboration, that was why I talked about it one time as well. I was trying to get like a more convenient space where I could invite people to work. So because I know that there are certain members of my team that enjoy that physical collaboration, so no problem. Whenever you need that physical collaboration, there's a space for you. There are also some of my team members that always like to do things, or that always like to feel like they are working on this thing as a side gig, as a side project, something that should be like a weekend job, something you just, you know, do ASAP and then, you know, deliver what you need to deliver, get off. I create that kind of environment for them. I make every single task feel like, you know, a side project that they are passionate about to work on. It's more like a passion project, you know. So because I have built that skill to be able to, you know, be different people to be a different person for different people, I can also enhance that skill to help people perceive the same environment in a different way. Now, my startup, my company, is one environment, but I have been able to help people see that same environment or perceive that same environment in different ways according to the information I know about them and how they want to be treated. Now, this is not a manipulation this time around. This is me making an environment more convenient and comfortable for people to enjoy what they do. So that's why understanding this law is important. It doesn't just help you to know yourself. It helps you to make the society better. And the second law I'm going to be taking from The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene is the law of repression. And in the law of repression, this was where he was particularly talking about this dark side and this shadow. And he also made reference to Carl Jung a lot in this particular law. And he talked about certain points, tips on how to identify, when these dark sides are being projected. So he talked about contradicting behavior. This is practically hypocrisy, which is this talks directly to me. When you say that something is wrong, or you point out something that people should not do, but you kind of wish you were doing it, or you actually even are already doing it, right? And then he talked about emotional outbursts. And I talked about it now that anything that makes you speak about something so passionately, so emotionally, that you do something and then you're wondering, like, how did I say this? How did I do this? You should watch out for those things as well. He talked about over-idealization. So if you have this particular cause, it can be a good cause. It can be something around maybe women's rights or children's rights, but you have this over-idealization that's already making you do or say things that are inappropriate, but they're for a good cause. Imagine because you are fighting for women's rights and then they build maybe a men's only hospital, but you go there and burn it because you feel like there should not be hospitals for only men, and women should have access to all hospitals or things like that. Now, that's kind of like a good cause, fighting for women's rights and then, helping them get access to healthcare. But that action you have done, is definitely not a great action. So you should be watching out for over-idealizations. Next is accidental behaviors. It was a mistake. I don't know how I did this. I did it. I didn't know how it happened. I just suddenly saw myself doing it. Yep, those are repressed dark sides, repressed shadows projecting themselves. And you are subconscious, you're unconscious about it, and you're not aware. Next is denial. And this is also tied very closely with contradicting behaviors. In denial, you are refusing to accept that you can do certain things. You are refusing to accept that you have the tendencies to, lie, tendencies to steal, to kill, these tendencies. And the last one, of course, I've been talking about it, projection. Always be open to identify when you are projecting. When you are in a particular, you have a particular aura that you just keep on going on and on and on with less interactions between your cognitive and your intuition. And then you just come for your cognitive, keep spilling out things that you don't even know how these things are coming out from your mouth, but you like the way you feel and you just go on and on. You're taking things from your raw emotions and you're just pouring them out. Be very wary of those kind of projections, because these are signals telling you that you are not entirely conscious of these things that you're doing. It means that there's another consciousness that's actually saying these things and doing these things. So you need to be able to say, hey, who are you? And this is not who I am. So if you're coming from me, it means that you are inside me. So hey, let's work together instead of against each other. So how do you find common empathetic traits that that helps you see that you might be hiding something behind certain form of masks? So the first is the tough guy mask. I'm a tough guy. I can, nobody can come close to me. I can beat anybody up. Most times, these things are actually role-playing. They are traits that you have created to hide subtle, timid parts of yourself. Then we have the scent, of course. We have this scent factor is very, very prominent in a lot of churches, a lot of religious bodies, mosques, Muslim or Christian, you know, religion, where you feel like you are the best, you have no sin, you are free of sin. Like even Carl Jung said that to even act is a sin, like to do something is a sin, to do anything at all is a sin. So that if you have that kind of mindset, you never think like a saint. If you think that, oh, you wake up, you stand up in the morning, it's a sin you've committed already. If you have that kind of mindset, you never ever think that you're a saint, because everything you practically do in your life is considered a sin. It's not, you know, religiously correct, but it's a mindset or ideology that can help you to repress, not only repress, but, you know, improve how you consider yourself a saint sometimes. We also have other things like, you know, being a fanatic, the passive-aggressive charmer, being a rigid rationalist, being an extreme entrepreneur. This extreme entrepreneurship, big issue with me as well. I always find myself falling into the rabbit hole of, never mind, I'm just going to do it myself. You know, I always find myself falling that rabbit hole where I'm supposed to delegate tasks to different people, but I eventually just say, well, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to get the door myself. Those are very subtle traits of narcissism as well. And it also kind of projects a shadow of me that also stalls on my work. See how it works? So, exploring your shadow, as you have seen from the things I've said, helps you identify some of the things that make you insecure. If you're a shy person, then, and your shadow has a personality that likes to share its ideas, then it means that you're probably insecure about sharing your ideas. And if you're going to take one thing away, so far so good. If you take just one thing away, that would be me telling you to be closer to the things that passionately upset you. I have seen these things happen to me more times than I can remember, where I lose my rationality. I do something very irrational because I am trying to maybe help somebody and they are refusing that help. And then I take a drastic action because they refuse me helping them. Now, this is an example of that empathetic narcissist that I talked about earlier. Because I feel good by helping people, I get so upset and angry that they don't take my help. Then I do something irrational. That's a shadow. That's a shadow move. That's a dark side that I had to acknowledge. I think this episode has been quite packed with a lot, and I hope that I am communicating the exact points of knowing how and when to identify these dark sides, and most importantly, learning to integrate these dark sides into yourself. Only by so doing do you become truly whole, and only by so doing can you reach your full potential, because you are now using energy from the most energetic source, from the most passionate and emotional part of you, and you're combining it with your intuition, you're combining it with form, you're combining it with elegance, you're combining it with this basic self-opinion that you have, that you are good, that you understand what you're doing, and that you know yourself. Combining that energy with these self-opinions would help you achieve greater results than you envisioned. This is also a note to myself. Mide, don't run away from your shadow. Accept it. Integrate it into yourself. and watch yourself become way better than you planned. Thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode of The Journey With Mide. This is the fourth episode in the tool series, and the goal for this tool series has been to create new concepts every month of this year that would help us live better lives. In the future of this podcast, I plan to invite bigger guests that would share more insights, deeper insights into, you know, things, tools we can use to live in the society, to achieve our full potential better. And the fact that you're coming, listening up to this moment goes a long way. Please, if you find these episodes useful to you, share them with your friends, share them with people you think would need them, talk about it to them, or just listen to these things and then share them with people as well. Well, it would be great if you share them a link to the episode and get them to listen, but just you talking about it to other people would go a long way in my goal to be able to share these tools with as many people as I can. And I think it's going to be so helpful. By the end of the year, we would have learned so much about ourselves and so much about the world that we'll be able to achieve our goals better. We'll be able to eventually help the society better, as we all should. In that case, thank you again for listening, and I hope to see you soon. Bye.